This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Zach Ryland, and this is your weekly reading of The Messenger. Welcome to the month of May. Here, we'll be diving into The Messenger from Friday, May the 3rd. If you're joining us, it's about 6 o'clock in the evening on Sunday, May the 5th, or it may be pretty early in the morning on Monday, May the 6th. But either way, we appreciate you inviting us into your home and spending this time with us. This week's Messenger has a variety of community updates here. We're going to hear a bit about retirees, about ways to continue to think about the Eucharist, and of course, ways that we can serve and support those in our community who need it the most. So our first piece here in the Messenger is brought to us by Bella Young, multimedia correspondent. This is entitled, "The Community Comes Together to Help Families in Need." It was a day of fellowship and service as volunteers and agencies gathered to host a community baby shower at St. Joseph Parish in Cold Spring. In participation with this event, the diocese encouraged people to donate baby items. On April 25th, the employees of the Curia loaded a St. Vincent de Paul truck full of items to be dropped off at St. Joseph Church in preparation for the baby shower. Hosted by the Pregnancy Care Network of Northern Kentucky, there were 20 different agencies represented, united under a common goal of helping families in need. Representatives from the Campbell County Public Library passed out books to the children, walking or tottering past the tables. Books entitled Families Belong and The Three Little Pigs put a smile on both the parents' and the children's faces as they loaded these books into their bag. Also in attendance were the Franciscan Daughters of Mary, representing the Rose Garden Home Mission and its ministries. A full pregnancy care center helping moms make good choices in their pregnancies and assisting them with material needs for them and their babies. A no-questions-asked food pantry where families may receive food every day. The mission is open. A free primary care clinic called the Rose Garden Center for Hope and Healing. And a free dental clinic. All of this according to the Rose Garden Home Mission website. It was not only a variety of agencies that were in attendance, but also a variety of students who gave up their night to help those in need. Students from Bishop Brossard High School in Alexandria, Newport Central Catholic High School in Newport, St. Henry District High School in Erlanger, and Notre Dame Academy of Park Hills were in attendance as part of a volunteer opportunity. Aiding in a variety of tasks from passing out diapers and blankets to some being translators for those who did not speak Spanish. Faye Roche, the director of the Diocesan Pro-Life Office, estimates that there were upwards of 250 people from the community who were provided resources. This number is an increase from the previous year, where it was estimated that 200 people were in attendance. For those in attendance, it was a night of camaraderie, fellowship, and smiles as the community came together to help those in need. So a small article there to start us off, but not a small task, not a small effort, not a small lift to provide those 250 individuals with services that they need. In the Messenger, there's some extra photos that just show a variety of people walking around an open space with different tables set up, information, sign-up sheets, and resources available to help out those most in need. So we're appreciative that this event happened. If you have anyone in your friend or family network, or even you yourself, who may need support, I think reaching out to Faye Roche would be the right person to put you in contact with all those resources. And for the rest of us, there's an opportunity next year to volunteer, and to take part, and be engaged. We're moving now to a piece from Laura Keener, our editor. This is entitled, "Parish Missionary Disciples Training Complete. How will the Holy Spirit move?" Over 60 people from parishes across the Diocese of Covington have completed Parish Missionary Disciples Training on April the 27th. Parish Missionary Disciples Training might best be described as an invitation to a personal Pentecost, to encourage and develop a personal relationship with the Holy Spirit. Practically speaking, the sessions help participants identify times in their life when they have encountered the Holy Spirit, and to be able to share that experience and its impact on their faith life with others. Additionally, participants learn to pray with and for one another, to teach others to pray, and to accompany others on their Catholic discipleship journey. Quote, "One of the coolest things that I've been thinking about ever since the training ended was how we took a whole session to practice and to talk about good conversation, and how to take conversation deeper, to have more intentional conversation," said Anna Wells, the parish secretary at Divine Mercy Parish in Bellevue, who was one of the participants. As a young adult, Ms. Wells is beginning to set down roots at a parish and is eager to be actively involved in parish ministry. PMD training was an opportunity to meet parishioners from other parishes with decades of parish life experience, who are equally on fire for everyone and for the faith. Quote, "Everyone across the board is on fire, and that was really awesome," she said. "I'm just grateful for the whole experience, and I'm grateful that we were able to be given this opportunity to come together as a diocese." Mark Johnson, youth minister at St. Thomas Parish in Fort Thomas, also appreciated the opportunity to meet parishioners from other parishes and to share struggles and successes. Quote, "One of the biggest issues I think we face as a diocese is kind of this atomization of parishes, where they are totally separate from other parishes," said Mr. Johnson. Recognizing that there are parishes that are doing some ministries very well and others that are struggling, Mr. Johnson saw the training as the beginning for parishes to cross-contaminate ministries and to help each other. Quote, "We need to come together to do this mission together," he said. When thinking about evangelization and Jesus' Great Commission for all Christians to go and make disciples of all nations, Mr. Johnson's heart and mind turns to the example of the martyrs. Quote, "To have given their lives, their whole self, for the mission of Christ is a wake-up call to us, to realize that the saints didn't give their lives just for us to sit around and keep the faith for ourselves. That would be offensive, really, when you think about it," he said. The bond between participants of this first group was evident. Deacon Jim Fortner, the diocesan chief operating officer and leader of the diocese's With One Heart initiative, has agreed to gather the group together again in August to reconnect and share what each has been able to accomplish or are struggling with at their parish. Looking ahead, as parishioners begin to be invited to participate in Cohort 2 of PMD training happening in 2025, both Ms. Wells and Mr. Johnson encourage others to be open to the information and to take that leap of faith. Quote, "No matter how unequipped you feel like you are, God is calling you to be on mission and to be an evangelist," said Mr. Johnson. Quote, "It's free. It's just given to you as a gift," said Ms. Wells, noting that generous donors are paying for all the data collection and training being presented by the Catholic Leadership Institute. Quote, "I would really suggest to stick it out, even if you're a little scared at the beginning and feel like, oh, I can't do this. Because that's the whole point. We can't do it, but Jesus can. And so we're just giving him the space to do things with us if we just commit," Ms. Wells said. Parish Missionary Disciples is one of the three training programs that make up the leadership development emphasis of the diocese's With One Heart initiative. Parish Missionary Disciples is leadership and evangelization training for parishioners who are actively involved in ministry at their parish. The other two leadership development programs are Good Leaders, Good Shepherds, which is for priests, and Tending the Talents, which is for parish and curious staff. Cohort 1 of Good Leaders, Good Shepherds began in the fall of 2023 and will conclude this June. And pastors are now inviting parish staff and regular volunteers to participate in Tending the Talents, which will begin in August. These programs were developed and are implemented by the leadership consultants from the Catholic Leadership Institute. A second group for each program will be offered again in 2025. Looking at the timeline announced in the September 22nd edition of The Messenger, the With One Heart initiative is a little ahead of schedule. The first group of parish missionary disciples training was slated to begin in fall of 24. Instead, the days-long succession training began in February and was completed in April of 2024. So it sounds like we're moving ahead, making some really good progress as we continue on and go forward with the With One Heart initiative. Some great things happening here in the Diocese of Covington as part of that initiative. We're turning the corner now. We're going to talk about an article written by Mara Baker, the staff writer. This one is entitled, Curia and Cathedral Thank Retirees for Their Service to the Church. For individuals who have devoted part of their lives to the Diocese of Covington's Curia and Cathedral Basilica of the Assumption will be retiring, and their vocations were celebrated with luncheons on April the 28th and 29th in Bishop Howard Memorial Auditorium in Covington. April the 28th's luncheon celebrated the retirement of two longtime cathedral staff members, Jerry Landry, maintenance director, who served the cathedral for 17 years, and Benedictine Sister Barbara Wost, pastoral associate who served for 26 years. The celebration was shared among family, friends, and parishioners alike. April 29th celebrated the retirement of Joan LaCoy, the Chancery Administrative Assistant, after 16 years, and the Messenger's own advertising manager, Chuck Brinkman, after 2 years. Curious staff gathered to celebrate their accomplishments. At the cathedral's retirement luncheon, Father Ryan Mayer, the rector, thanked the two retiring staff members for their service. He referred to Mr. Landry as, quote, the ultimate fixer. He continues, Jerry has put his many talents at the service of the church, said Father Mayer. He is taking care of the Lord's house. Quote, it was an honor and a privilege, Mr. Landry said, as he was handed the microphone to follow. About Sister Barbara's service to the cathedral, Father Mayer commented on how she, quote, very much had a preference to be in the background and never taking credit for herself. He continued, Sister has been a great stabilizing presence over the years, kind of keeping us in an even keel, reminding us that prayer is the most important thing that we do. At the end of the luncheon, Bishop John Eifert also thanked Mr. Landry and Sister Barbara for their service and congratulated them on their retirement. Quote, many people here, they will tell you, he said, you have stolen their hearts and your example takes their breath away. The next day at the Curia's retirement luncheon, Bishop Eifert also thanked both Ms. LaCoy and Mr. Brinkman. Quote, we hate to see both of you go, he said, but we will always hold that love and respect for you in our hearts and look forward to your visits when you drop by. Laura Keener, the editor of The Messenger, also expressed her appreciation for Mr. Brinkman's work. Hired on as the advertising manager following the COVID-19 pandemic, Mr. Brinkman was, quote, the perfect fit, said Ms. Keener. She continues, he was the easiest hire we ever did, and we really appreciated hiring him there. Mr. Brinkman expressed how, despite having worked 42 years in sales, the Curia was the first place to work that felt like a family to him. Quote, thank you all, he said. Jamie Schroeder, the chancellor, commented on Ms. LaCoy's 16 years of service, the last three as chancery secretary. Quote, we really threw her into the deep end, she said, because it was right when we were planning for the consecration and installation of Bishop Eifert. She was a trooper and a good sport. Joni is a hard worker. She has the heart of a servant. So you can hear there about four great individuals retiring from their service to the diocese and to the church, and really appreciate that piece in there that was a reminder for all of us. She reminds us that prayer is the most important thing we do. That piece of wisdom is great around the board. No matter who you are, where you sit, what you're doing, that's a great word of advice for all of us as we enter into this week. We're going to move forward now and think a little bit more broadly. We're going to talk about the Eucharistic pilgrimage that will happen here in the future. This is brought to us by Bella Young, the multimedia correspondent. This is entitled, Eucharistic Pilgrimage Through Cincinnati Provides an Opportunity for Eucharistic Experiences. The National Eucharistic Pilgrimage is going to be making its way through the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. Walking what is known as the St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Route, the Perpetual Pilgrims will be arriving in the Archdiocese on July the 1st and stay through July the 7th. Perpetual Pilgrims are a group of committed young adults who are walking the entire pilgrimage route, beginning in New Haven, Connecticut, and ending in the National Eucharistic Congress in Indianapolis, Indiana. Local Catholics are encouraged to meet the Perpetual Pilgrims, support them, and walk with them on short routes as they pass through nearby neighborhoods. At its passage through Cincinnati to celebrate the occasion, there will be a Eucharistic festival and Mass celebration on July the 6th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The day will begin with Mass celebrated by Archbishop Dennis Schmirr at the Cathedral Basilica of St. Peter in Chains at 10 a.m. Following Mass, the faithful will process with the Blessed Sacrament through the downtown of Cincinnati to Fountain Square. The Eucharistic Festival will kick off with a Holy Hour that will include praise and worship music by Damascus Worship, a Eucharistic Reflection by Father Jacob Lindell, and benediction, according to the Archdiocese of Cincinnati website. There will also be games, food trucks, and activities, making for a family fun day. July 6th is not the only day to participate in the pilgrimage. There will be events held every day from July the 1st through July the 7th at different locations throughout the Archdiocese. On July the 1st, a Eucharistic procession will start at the Greene County Expo Center, and arrive at St. Bridget Church in Xenia. Upon arrival at St. Bridget, there will be a holy hour, and priests will be available to hear confessions. There will also be a community meal after holy hour. According to the Archdiocese of Cincinnati website, the event will feature a display of Eucharistic miracles by St. Carlo Acutis. Also, at St. Bridget Church, there will be overnight adoration and confession until Mass the following morning at 7:30 a.m. After Mass, there will be a Eucharistic procession that will travel to Xenia Station, with a stop along the way to pray outside Greene County Jail. On Tuesday, July the 2nd, there will be a holy hour from 5 to 6 p.m. at St. Francis de Sales Church in Lebanon. The Holy Hour will include music and a rosary led by the Holy Family School of Faith and benediction. Following the Holy Hour, there will be a parish potluck. On the following day, July the 3rd, there will be a morning Mass at St. Francis de Sales Church and a continental breakfast to follow. There will then be a Eucharistic procession to Harmon Park. Ending the day on July the 3rd at St. Gertrude Church in Cincinnati, there will be an evening prayer vigil for the nation during the Eucharistic Adoration. There will be benediction to follow. Resting a day on July the 4th, the events continue on July the 5th with 7 a.m. Mass at St. Gertrude Church, followed by a Eucharistic procession through downtown Madeira. That evening, there will be a holy hour at St. Cecilia Church in Cincinnati with a cookout to follow. After the cookout, there will be a Eucharistic procession to St. Mary Church in Hyde Park, where the Eucharist will be placed in the tabernacle and Vespers will follow. On July the 6th, the pilgrimage will continue from Holy Cross Immaculata in Cincinnati to St. Peter in Chains in Cincinnati with a 1.6-mile walk. There will then be Mass at St. Peter in Chains with the Eucharistic Festival following. July the 7th will begin at St. Lawrence Church in Cincinnati with a morning Mass and benediction. A Eucharistic procession will then travel from St. Lawrence Church to St. William Church in Cincinnati, where a bilingual holy hour will take place. This will be followed with food from the Knights of Columbus and music from the local Hispanic community, according to the Archdiocese of Cincinnati website. July the 8th, the last day of the pilgrimage, in Cincinnati will begin with Mass at St. William, with a short procession to St. Teresa of Avila Church in Cincinnati. As part of the pilgrimage, the perpetual pilgrims will walk between each location listed. For the information on times, addresses, and more, go to the Archdiocese of Cincinnati's website for more information. And so you can hear there a whole slew of events and activities set to take place as the perpetual pilgrims make their way through Cincinnati, all heading towards Indianapolis, Indiana. If you've got a chance, it sounds like there's some great opportunity there to take place at any one or maybe even multitudes of those masses, walks, and activities. We're going forward now to our commentary section. This week's commentary, we're going to start off with a piece from OSV News. This one's entitled, Tortured Poet Taylor Swift Offers Troubled Tales of Our Time. When Taylor Swift sings, people pay attention. Over the past two decades, her words have become the backdrop of movies, life milestones, wedding dances, and long car rides. Love her or hate her, the pop star's cultural influence is undeniable. Swift grapples with the weight of her words in her latest offering, The Tortured Poets Department, a 31-track double album that explores heartbreak, fame, and longing. The album is written in a confessional style with blunt lyrics that are also gritty and insightful. Disappointingly for those who preferred Swift's cleaner tracks for her teens and her 20s, the new release has the most explicit tracks of any of her albums and is definitely intended for more mature audiences. The songs contain many direct and indirect references to sex and drugs. While listeners should approach her latest offering with caution and discernment, Swift's songs explore interesting cultural themes, with scathing criticisms and more lighthearted self-examination. In her song, Who's Afraid of Little Old Me?, Swift appears to playfully mock the critics, baffled by her success. I'm always drunk on my own tears, isn't that what they all said? That I'll sue you if you step on my lawn. That I'm fearsome, and I'm wretched, and I'm wrong. Putting narcotics into all of my songs, and that's why you're still singing along. The point is that people are still singing along, to the tune of $1 billion in revenue for her Eras Tour, the highest-grossing concert tour ever. Poets became the most streamed album of 2024 on Spotify within a week. What does keep people singing along? Swift's imagery and knack for capturing complex sentiments and pithy turns of phrase continue to resonate, whether the listener is searching for her insight into Swift's past relationships or whether it captures a moment or romance in their own lives. An ancient Greek philosopher, a doomed prophetess, and references to classic children's literature are all tools of her craft in poets, as she processes the past with wit and self-awareness. You know how to ball. I know Aristotle, Swift sings in So High School, a song that is likely both about high school nostalgia and her new romance with Kansas City Chiefs tight end, Travis Kelce. Can Taylor Swift name Aristotle's four causes from memory? The depth of the pop star's familiarity with the ancient philosopher is unknown, but at the very least, for her, her work seems to bring about the catharsis he talked about in his Poetics, a purging of purifying of emotions highlighted in his writing on tragedy. I cry a lot, but I am so productive, it's an art, is a line that many on social media embraced from her eerily upbeat, I Can Do It With a Broken Heart, about moving forward with hidden wounds, likely inspired by her tour following the 2023 ending of her six-year relationship with British actor Joe Alwyn. Poets features more religious imagery than her past albums. Some of her references may be troubling to many Catholics, particularly in Guilty of Sin, where she sings about hidden longings and guilt over sexual fantasies. What if I roll the stone away? They're going to crucify me anyway. What if the way you hold me is actually what's holy? Her blending of religious imagery with sexual references is reminiscent of False God from her 2019 Lover album. However, she also appears to be referencing the harsh judgment she gets from the public, regardless of her actions. This theme is apparent throughout the album, including in the song, But Daddy, I Love Him, where Swift, eerily, is very particularly aimed at hypocritical Christians who act not out of love, but from hatred toward others. Sarah's and Hannah's in their Sunday best, clutching their pearls, sighing, what a mess. I just learned these people and try to save you, because they hate you. She asks God to save the most judgmental creeps, saying that she doesn't need the prayers of those sanctimoniously performing soliloquies about her. Swift also appears to express vulnerability and self-doubt in her references to religion. In the somewhat tongue-in-cheek, I can fix him, no really I can, she sings, they shake their heads saying, God help her, when I tell him he's my man, but your good Lord doesn't need to lift a finger, I can fix him, no, really I can, and only I can. But by the end of the song she acknowledges, whoa, maybe I can't. In The Black Dog, depicting a struggle to get over a former lover, she sings about hiring a priest to come and exorcise my demons. A biblical reference is featured in The Prophecy, where she sings of failures in love and wanting someone who wants my company. She laments, and it was written, I got cursed like Eve got bitten. Oh, it was punishment. As Eve was metaphorically bitten by the consequences of her own action, of biting into the forbidden fruit, Swift seems to be singing of her fears, that she is the reason why she hasn't found her soulmate. I'm so afraid I sealed my fate, no sign of soulmates. Swift actually recognizes how valuable it would be to have faith here, praising the woman of faith and acknowledging her superiority, but she confesses her impatience and paints her search for answers as becoming increasingly unmoored. And I look unstable, gathered with a coven round a sorceress table. A greater woman has faith, but even statues crumble if they're made to wait. After all these years, Swift continues to write about what she knows of heartbreak, life in the public eye, and facing her darkest fears and deepest longings. The singer who once swore to be overdramatic and true fulfills that pledge in her confessional album, poking fun at herself along the way. Amid her biting critiques and purging of past wounds, Swift sees the painting of these tragedies as part of her journey forward. She said of the album that there's nothing to avenge, no scores to settle once wound is healed, and upon further reflection, a good number of them turned out to be self-inflicted. This writer is of the firm belief that our tears become holy in the form of ink on a page. Once we have spoken our saddest story, we can be free of it. While these saddest stories show dark moments of disillusionment with false gods of fame and men with impressionistic paintings of heaven that turned out to be fakes, they also illustrate recognition of the value of faith and lasting love, even if that value is mostly apparent through the suffering their absence causes. Loretta Brown is the culture editor for OSV News. And it's really interesting to hear pop culture and social elements reflected back through the lens of your Catholic faith. As you head into your week, there's many new things to reflect on here. Maybe Taylor Swift, maybe the power of prayer. But we hope that as you get started and head forward into this week, that you're able to take care of yourself, stay healthy, and be well. Thanks for hanging out with us today.